Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Division meeting to order and welcome everyone. I don't know if anybody's had, we don't have a quorum, so we're, I think we do. Representative Murphy, have you had an opportunity to look at the minutes?
No.
Okay. Representative Bo?
I have, Mr. Chair, and they look fine, so I would move acceptance of.
Thank you, Representative Bo. And thank you for your honesty, Representative Murphy. any questions to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? We've approved the minutes for our March 6th meeting. Thank you, staff, for putting those together. Representative Erdahl, we're going to move the agenda to at your request a little bit. So we'll start with House File 517. And so, Representative Erdahl, would you like to move your bill? I can move that House File. Do you want me to do it, sir? Okay. I move that House File 517 or 517 be laid over for possible inclusion. So, Representative Erdahl, we have your bill before us, and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. TPT has historically, through various cycles of legacy funding, received appropriations, and they are here today to discuss that appropriation with you. And we have Dean Orton, the Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer at Twin Cities PBS, and he will provide public television's testimony on House File 517.
Thank you, sir. Welcome to our committee, and state your name and go ahead, please.
Thank you, Representative Earl. Dean Orton with Minnesota Public Television Association today, also Chief Operating Officer for Twin Cities PBS. Before my brief remarks asking for your support for our request, I wanted to share a short video with the committee. As we prepared for this important renewal request for Legacy, we realized that there's a larger 10-year milestone coming up for the amendment. The state, this committee, and the Legacy Amendment has not only been critically important to MPTA, but so many other worthy and important organizations. And as Minnesotans, we voted to make it happen now 10 years later. And we wanted to put together a video to really share and widely broadcast. It is an amazing story to tell, and we wanted you to be some of the first to see what we pulled together. So this is something that we will be sharing through our distribution in the upcoming year.
Thank you. That sounds great.
Minnesotans value the arts and their cultural heritage, and now have greater access to the arts than ever before. In 2008, Minnesota became the first state in the nation to write funding for arts, culture, and history into its constitution when voters approved the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. More than 108,000 artists and creative workers from all cultural backgrounds live, work, and create in Minnesota. And many of its nearly 1,700 arts organizations have established educational programs. In Legacy's first 10 years, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund has fueled this work, resulting in a 50% growth in attendance and overall economic impact, now at an annual $2 billion. Communities across Minnesota have been activated, revitalized, and strengthened. The Legacy Amendment ensures support for the environment, arts, and culture through 2034. Thank you, Minnesota.
Really is an amazing story, and we're excited to share this piece throughout the upcoming year and to have been a part of that 10-year process. With that, I'd switch gears into our current request. As you know, MPTA, made up of six stations, of which Twin Cities PBS is one, is very unique and powerful asset to serve the state in fulfilling its mission behind the Legacy Amendment. I just want to share a few facts to encourage you to fully fund our request. One, our mission is to enrich lives and strengthen our communities through the power of media. Two, we focus our programming on advancing education, our culture, our history and heritage, and civic engagement. It's what we're really good at doing. Also, we serve over 5 million residents over the air and all Minnesotans on cable, satellite, as well as rapidly growing numbers of online streaming and social media platforms. Each of the six stations develop local programming important to their particular viewing area. In addition, you'll learn about another project where we lock arms and do statewide projects now as MPTA. Public television provides education services to over 275 school districts and over 192,000 students. And finally, I know you have a lot of tough funding priority decisions to make. I don't envy you for having to make them. But in terms of fully funding our request and making a case for us remaining as a top priority, I would share. Perhaps no other investment of state funds that benefits as many people as does the investment in Minnesota PBS stations. We serve more people more often as an investment than any other cultural or educational organization in Minnesota. More than a public schools and the universities, more than museums or parks, in just a matter of 2 weeks, 2 million people look to and count on their local public television stations to entertain, educate, and inform. In terms of accountability, we've been asked by the administration to help teach others at recipients on how to report impact and how to be accountable for legacy investment as a private public partner. We have exemplary abilities. We stretch every state dollar year in and year out and use it wisely in your investments. And with your continued investment, we will continue to bring programs for Minnesota, about Minnesota, to a statewide audience. Our work around arts, culture, and history is reaffirming of why we live in this state and why businesses stay and why they invest. And so we think this work really cuts at the core of being Minnesotan. So we thank you for your support and the time we've had in the last 10 years. We hope that you'll continue to support the work that we want to do for the following biennium, and hopefully we'll have another amazing 10 years together. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Are we going to hear something from this gentleman, or is...
That is for the...
Part two.
Okay. Any questions related to this this part one, to House File 517? So I think just to keep things on task, we'll just... I'll renew my motion that House File 517 be laid over for possible inclusion. So I'd like to move that House File 516 be laid over for possible inclusion. So Representative Erdahl, if you'd like to kind of continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And 516 deals with a proposed series on immigration. And to go back in history a little bit, because I was a history teacher, several years ago, Mr. Bill Straczynski and I were walking down the tunnel, and this is about the time of the Civil War, Sesquicentennial was taking place, and I thought we should do something along the lines of like Ken Burns' Civil War, only about Minnesota, and the Indian Wars that were happening here. And I remember Mr. Straczynski said, well, yeah, we could do that, but, you know, it cost $1 million. Or could, up to, it didn't, but it could cost up to that. I'm immediately thinking, well, how am I going to, who do I have to talk to work this out and get this together? And then I remembered I chaired the committee. And somehow something happened, and that program was produced and did quite well. And then... Since then, there's been a program on Vietnam that was an award-winning program, and now a similar program is being proposed for immigration. And I think this is a particularly good time to do something on immigration from a historical standpoint, and also to interview the immigrants, many of them who have come to this state, obviously. But I think there's a misunderstanding about a lot of immigration today. And I think understanding some of the situations that we encounter today could come from looking at the past, the fact that there have been actual barriers to immigration, that we have the Chinese Exclusion Act, the First Quota Act, the Second Quota Act. I think people don't realize that these things have happened in our history for a long time. And so I look forward to seeing what can be done by public television to help Minnesotans today understand the immigration process and where we've been and where we are today. And so with that, I'd like to introduce Daniel Bergen, the senior producer at Twin Cities PBS. He is the producer of the new Minnesota history series, Minnesota Experience, which was launched in September 2018. Mr. Bergen will provide public television's testimony on House File 516, Minnesota Journeys.
Thank you, sir. Welcome to our committee, and state your name and go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Erdahl, Chair Lilly, Vice Chair. My name is Daniel Bergen. I'm a multi-generational Minnesotan, proud South Minneapolitan, and I am the senior producer of Twin Cities PBS. So it's always cool to come to the Capitol and to look at the Capitol itself. A few years ago, I produced a documentary on the Capitol's architect, Cass Gilbert. But there are countless stories found in that building, in that structure, and many of the narratives are about the workers who built it. Many of these men came from other states to work on the site, but there were a number of European immigrants who worked in different capacities on the Capitol. There were also African-American masons and stonecutters who came north to Minnesota to work on the Capitol and stayed, and families were kind of formed. And that idea of journeys, of their journeys, of journeys for work and opportunity, coming to Minnesota, making a life, is what we're interested in exploring with this new project, Minnesota Journeys. We all have a Minnesota origin story. You all have a Minnesota origin story. For some of you, it goes back several generations, and then for some of us, you know, we maybe lived that journey. And so they're all powerful and important, and that's what we're interested in exploring. So the public television stations of Minnesota are really eager to start this new special project, Minnesota Journeys. It'll be a statewide public history project that will use objects and artifacts as part of the storytelling, as a lens on the past and the present. So we're going to model this, as you heard, on the success of the Minnesota Remembers Vietnam Initiative, which really was groundbreaking in a number of ways, certainly in terms of engagement and distribution, a framework we created with community that really was wildly successful for the Minnesota Remembers Vietnam Initiative. This new initiative will explore kind of how we got to now, as Representative Erdahl was kind of describing. We like this idea of using objects, keepsakes, and heirlooms as kind of touchstones for the storytelling, so that'll be a part of it. But we'll explore all different kinds of journeys to Minnesota, from the earliest Dakota experiences to arrivals over the last two centuries. Like Minnesota Remembers Vietnam, we'll create a multimedia story wall where we will call for and curate journey stories from across the state. We'll, of course, create compelling long-form documentaries, as we did with Vietnam. We'll also share resources with our sister stations of the MPTA to see their own local storytelling. And, of course, like with Minnesota Remembers Vietnam, which had a really amazing life and still does in the education space, we're really excited to make sure that from K-12 to lifelong learning, that we'll have a lot of educational resources and experiences for all Minnesotans. I just spent Black History Month kind of moving through schools throughout our communities, and so I know and have witnessed over my years as public TV producer the power and impact of our history work. It's kind of cool to be sitting next to a history teacher because I often interview you. I might turn you into a talking head someday soon, Representative Erdahl. Again, you know, this initiative is largely based on the success of Minnesota Remembers Vietnam. I've been with Twin Cities PBS for over a quarter century, right out of the U of M, and it's one of the most amazing projects we've done. We're really proud of it, and we're really excited to replicate it with Minnesota Journeys. You know, candidly and in all humility, no organization has the trust and the reach that PBS in Minnesota does, that the public TV stations in Minnesota do. And so we know that Minnesota Journeys will be a successful storytelling experience for Minnesotans, like Minnesota Remembers Vietnam. And finally, and importantly, as we did with Minnesota Remembers Vietnam, we fully expect to use the legacy funds to leverage additional resources and support from donors and collaborate with dozens of other organizations across the state. You know, Martin Luther King said, we don't make history, we are made by history. And I've learned that in our work, certainly. We're all formed by our past. Our communities are what's made of what's come before. This kind of braided history of all of our journeys is really what makes Minnesota. It's really kind of awesome to have the elders associated with the Hmong Museum here, because we want to learn their stories, and they'll want to learn the stories of your ancestors as well. And that's what Minnesota Journeys will be about. So thank you for your time and your continued support.
Thank you, Mr. Bergen. And Representative Erdahl, we have someone that wants to, from the public, that wants to say something. Mr. Hughes, is that okay now? It would be a good time? Is that
sure?
All right.
Good afternoon, Chair Leanne Lilly and Rep Erdahl, members of the committee. My name is Mark Hughes. You may wonder how this affects me. I'm one of 1.4 Minnesotans, but TPT hits home closer than just been going statewide. I'm a former member of the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities, and before I left, we got a relationship going with TPT and produced a series on the ADA and its anniversaries in that. And then also on the Minnesota Channel was a show called Disability Viewpoints, and somebody anchored that. But I think it would be great to have Rep Erdahl as a featured guest on Almanac one time, because I know he could probably fill the whole hour, so there we go. But anyway, the reason I'm really here today is there's a grant in the bill for some new production equipment. TPT was founded back in 1957. As an educational station at Twin Cities under the license of KTC-TV Channel 2, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Minnesota. In that time, they bought and sold a lot of equipment. As you know, like an IT center in a business, in a computer center, that equipment changes. So does it in television. It changes so rapidly that every 2 years, I'm sure, you could have a buying spree. But I'm asking this committee and members of the state of Minnesota, and if we have to have it approved through Congress, to approve this grant, because that's what TPT still does. It produces great documentaries. It even lets little guys like me through the front door once in a while, and produces some great education material. And if we're going to have all the ethnic groups that we do in the state of Minnesota now, and they all are welcome, we have to educate them in different ways. And the equipment is a tool by which TPT helps educate all the people of Minnesota. So thank you for your time, and I hope you consider that grant for new production equipment.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes.
I apologize for my voice. Thank you.
Okay. We could hear you loud and clear.
You're very wise, I thought.
Chair Erdahl, any final comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just, I'm wondering, do you know if Eric Escola streams this hearing?
I would think he'd want to, Mr. Representative Erdahl.
Again, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming, and I hope members have a chance and the public to take a look at what you're doing going back to the first bill. I mean, I just really am very impressed with what you're doing with the legacy dollars, and I know that 15 million views, 15,000 different artists. I mean, these numbers are amazing. 89 million views around the country. Anyways, these statistics are incredible, and I know they're true. I've watched a lot of your programs, so thank you. With that, I renew my motion that House File 516 be laid over for possible inclusion, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
members.
Are you up?
Yeah, you're up.
So, As the vice chair is approaching, we've already heard from a public radio at another hearing and did a great presentation. So Vice Chair Wasilek, would you like to move that House File 1338 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move that House File 1338 be included for possible inclusion.
Thank you. So that's been moved. Representative Wasilek, go ahead if you're ready. If you want to tell us a little bit or introduce Mr. Kavanaugh, however you want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll speak a little bit and then I'll turn it over if there's anything else to add. Since 2010, Minnesota Public Radio's legacy-funded programs and events have enriched Minnesotans' lives and strengthened the vibrant culture that makes our state such a great place to live, work, and play. House File 1338 appropriates $3.9 million in legacy funds to NPR to maintain and build upon the programming and events that they've developed over the past 8 years. The funding will assist NPR in its efforts to build audiences for Minnesota artists, engage Minnesota schools and college students with live activities and curriculum, develop Minnesota musicians and journalists, and preserve historically significant recorded events and stories for future generations of Minnesotans. NPR previously presented a detailed overview of the funding to the committee, and in the committee information is a copy of the fiscal year 18 annual legacy report for folks if they would like to take a look at it. With me is John Kavanaugh from NPR, and to assist with any questions, which we'll move on to now if folks have questions.
Thank you. Mr. Kavanaugh, would you like to say a few words?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I'm John Kavanaugh with Minnesota Public Radio. Thank you again for opening your offices and your schedules for meeting with us individually. I believe we've gotten to almost every member's office to discuss this in more detail. Out of respect for your time and the committee's agenda, I will stand for questions.
Any questions from members? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion or?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So Representative Wasilek renews her motion that House File 1338 be laid over for possible inclusion. So thank you very much, Mr. Kavanaugh. And Vice Chair Wasilek, maybe you can stay there because I think you have the next.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh. So Representative Wasilek, would you like to move that House File 1341 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Mr. Chair, yes, I would like to move that House File 1341 be moved for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much. We have that motion before us. Representative Wasilek, go ahead and thank you for moving. We got a little behind in the beginning there, so thank you for helping us catch up. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to speak to House File 1341 from a personal perspective and then talk a little bit about why this is so important to us in Minnesota. I took swimming lessons when I was a kid. I was not a great swimmer. I perfected the backstroke, and that was pretty much it. But I did participate at my local YMCA growing up as a kid. So this is personal for me as well. But I think it's also important to acknowledge that we have pretty big disparities among groups of children in Minnesota in terms of drowning rates and rates of children who know how to swim and have access to swimming lessons. So this appropriation would really help to help kind of close some of those gaps and ensure that kids have access to these programs. I think it also reflects pretty well on Minnesota. We are the land of 10,000 lakes. And when I was in college, I had a conversation about going to the beach, and friends from other states didn't know that we had beaches because they assumed that we were not by an ocean, so why would we have beaches? So I think it's really important. We have a lot of lakes. We have a lot of beaches. I and lots of other folks grew up swimming at the beaches, and so I want to make sure that we can have some money to help families equip their kids with skills that will help them swim. And make sure that we're reaching those populations that maybe don't have access right now. There are a couple of articles in the materials, too, that highlight some stories in the news that have really highlighted the need for swimming lessons, but also what happens when kids have swimming lessons. So in particular, one story that I remember hearing about on the news was an 11-year-old boy who actually saved somebody in his apartment swimming pool. Nobody else around the pool knew how to swim except him. And in the article, they actually talk about something that he learned in swim class, and that helped him do that. So just want to say that, and I have Shane here from the YMCA, and if he wants to add something as well.
Thank you, sir. Welcome. And Vice Chair Wozelik, I definitely saw that news piece where that boy saved. That was a great story. I think, was it one of your students?
Actually, I'm not quite sure on that one. But thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative, for your introduction, for your support. My name is Shane Hofer, and I'm also here to obviously testify on behalf of House File 1341. I just want to share that I come before you as a representative today of the Minnesota State Alliance of YMCAs, and also as the executive director of the White Bear Area YMCA in White Bear Lake, where I make my home. And I want to begin by talking about drowning in Minnesota. Keenly aware that Minnesota is home to more than 20,000 lakes and other outdoor sizable bodies of water. In fact, we like to begin water safety conversations by pointing out that the world is 71% water, and children are 100% curious. Drowning remains a real threat to our young people. Drowning is the second leading cause of death for children ages 1 to 14, second only to car accidents, and it's been that way for years. In Minnesota, 8 children died in 2016 from drowning. And for every child who did pass, another 5 required emergency care with non-fatal submersion injuries, which can often include severe brain damage and other long-term disabilities. And troublingly, similar to our state's achievement gap, there is a drowning gap, too. African-American children are 3 times more likely to die in drowning accidents than their white peers. And national research explains as much. Almost 2/3 of African-American and 45% of Hispanic and Latino children have little to no swimming ability, in contrast with only 40% of white children. Economics plays a role. In families with a household annual income of less than $50,000, 79% of children possess little to no swimming ability. As a state leader in water safety, the Y believes this reality is unacceptable, and it's time to make a change. There's good news. Formal swimming lessons reduce the likelihood of childhood drowning by 88%. And while no child is ever water safe, swimming lessons go a long way to make children safer around water. And for these reasons, as a statewide nonprofit led by local volunteers, the Y supports the water safety bill. Thank you, Representative Wozlawick, for advancing this legislation as its chief author. And thank you, Representatives Heintzman, Hausman, Erdahl, and Zhang, and the other lawmakers for your co-authorship of the bill. Specifically, the bill would provide $500,000 for organizations to fund swimming lessons for 10,000 low-income and at-risk children around the entire state, and to hire and train water safety instructors and lifeguards. This money would be available to a wide variety of organizations, community education, Park and Rec, the Girl Scouts, YMCAs, and others, basing swimming lessons on a nationally recognized curriculum, which would ultimately be determined by criteria set by the Commissioner of Education. The bill is also designed to be scalable. So we understand you have many requests before you, and so we believe that appropriations are valuable at different amounts. For example, even $100,000 could provide 2,000 children with swimming lessons. Given the persistent lifeguard shortage across the state of Minnesota, we don't want to lose sight of the reality that this bill will also help fund the training of new lifeguards for communities across the state. And in so doing, along with the swimming lessons program, help to preserve our cultural heritage of enjoying our lakes, public beaches, and pools come summer, if summer comes. It's important to note that swimming, considered in the context of the present childhood obesity crisis, is also a very good thing. Swimming involves a full-body workout combining cardiovascular and strength exercises. Swimming is a lifetime sport, as I believe the chairman can attest, and can reduce the risks of stroke, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, some cancers. Swimming lowers resting heart rates and blood pressure and improves cholesterol levels. For these reasons, in addition to the desire to protect our children, the bill has been endorsed by the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids Coalition. We will never know how many drownings we prevent, but without reservation, we can declare that this bill will save lives of the children in Minnesota. And it is important for that reason that we ask all of you to support the legislation. I would like to end by sharing a thank you note from a student from the Minnesota Math and Science Academy who recently took part in a water safety program at the YMCA in East St. Paul. This came on December 10th. It says, "Thank you for helping us swim last week. We'll be needing those type of skills to survive underwater. Thank you for protecting us while we were swimming. If you had not done that, I'm pretty sure half of us would be at the hospital trying to undigest the water we had swallowed, or we would not be at school today. Thank you for giving me the courage to believe in myself, I was too scared to jump in the deep end or even the shallow water. Thank you for believing in me. And that note came from either a seventh or an eighth grader. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I want to note I'm also joined by my colleague, Shannon Kinsler, who is our Senior Director of Aquatics in the Y and a nationally recognized expert in water safety.
Thank you, sir. Certainly the water and water aquatics are definitely part of our Minnesota tradition and cultural heritage. I have some questions here. Don't have a lot of time, but Representative Bowe, definitely want to hear your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. So back when I was much, much younger, I took swimming lessons and actually was a lifeguard for several summers as a summer job, taught swimming lessons for many years. So I appreciate everything that was said about the importance of learning how to swim. I made sure that my children had swimming lessons, and in fact, I gave them some of their swimming lessons myself. But the only thing I'm not sure of is the use of arts and cultural heritage funds for that. I think it's a very important subject, and I'd like to see funding go to it, but I'm just not sure about that aspect. So I just wanted to share that thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bowe. We're having that discussion. I've talked to the education chair and also the speaker. We're trying to figure out how to make this successful. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll disagree with my colleague. I think any time we can get legacy funds into any kind of education, I'm all for it. And I do have a question, though. You know, this seems to be geared towards a specific group of people, and I guess that's fine. But I don't know what the YMCA has to do with it right now, but this goes into education. And my question is, years ago, and maybe they're still doing it, part of the physical education class in communities that had swimming pools was swimming lessons. And I think it was a fantastic thing because everybody then got in that pool and it didn't make any difference if you could afford to or not. It was part of the physical education. Have you considered going down that route? Because if certain people or organizations apply, you may not hit half the kids.
So I would offer, you know, that...
Mr. Hofer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. I would offer simply to observe that, you know, in many communities, swimming pools aren't present. And for many of the communities that are able to provide swimming lessons in the public schools, those often take place at the middle school level because... for reasons of transportation and efficiency, or even at the high school level, those are where the swimming pools are located. And you know what research says, what we know to be true is that for us to make the most difference, we need to catch kids as soon as possible and provide water safety skills at an earlier age. And as to the Y's involvement, we're a nonprofit interested in advocating for water safety. This isn't about supporting the Y. This is about providing truly an opportunity throughout the state of Minnesota in places where there may be resources, may not be resources. We partner with the White Bear Lake Area School District. They don't have a swimming pool there or in Monomedi on either of those districts to provide water safety classes. And so, we've been able to establish a partnership that provides those opportunities there, and I would hope that this bill would provide similar opportunities across the state.
Representative Green.
Then just a comment for the sake of time. I think you should rethink that. Because we bus kids everywhere, probably way more than they want to be bused right now. And one or two days a week for a FIED class to bus the kids to the Y to make sure that every kid that comes through, even fourth grade, if that's the year you pick, could get them in the water and get them at least able to dog paddle, you know, I think it would pay off.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Heitzman? Okay. Thank you very much. Any final comments, Vice Chair Wozlik?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I'm happy that this bill got a chance to be heard, and whether or not it stays here is the question of where the funding comes from. But I think it is really important to the testimony we heard about really closing those gaps between students. There's one of the articles in here is about a couple of Somali students who actually drowned because they didn't know how to swim. So I think it's really important knowing we have a lot of, as someone else noted, a lot of Hmong elders here today and Hmong folks, and being clear that we have a lot of populations that maybe don't know how to swim, and we see those gaps, and so making sure that we're really doing what we can to address those gaps and help those folks learn how to swim. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and Mr. Hofer, thank you. I know you've been a leader in so many areas and fitness for all the area kids and so and adults, so thank you for that. Thank you. With that, Representative Wasilik renews her motion that House File 1341 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you both, and very good job. Chair Hausman, if you'd like to... Kind of had to laugh at his comment, if we ever have summer, I don't know, we seemed like that might be true. Thank you for coming, Representative Hausman. I know you're on the committee, so if you'd like to move that House File, what was it, 958?
958.
I'm kind of struggling with my in-between glasses and not glasses. So Representative Hausman will move that House File 958 be laid over for possible inclusion. So we have that before us. Thank you, Representative Hausman, and go ahead when you're ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and
coming to your committee.
And you may have trouble reading the other thing in your folders, but in your folders you will see the general laws from 1872. And I very often begin my presentations about the Bell Museum with a reference to that. You'll see in Section 6 that this is a natural history and geological specimens to be prepared and museum to be established at the university. And then I always have fun reading the one sentence, which is Section 6. Believe it or not, it's one sentence. It shall be the duty of the said Board of Regents. Now, imagine these are legislators like you in 1872 writing this paragraph. It shall be the duty of the said Board of Regents to cause proper specimens, skillfully prepared, secured, and labeled of all rocks, soils, ores, coals, fossils, cements, building stones, plants, woods, skins, and skeletons of animals, birds, insects, and fishes, and other mineral, vegetable, and animal substances and organisms discovered or examined in the course of said surveys to be preserved for public inspection free of cost in the University of Minnesota, in rooms convenient of access and properly warmed, lighted, ventilated, and furnished, and in charge of a proper scientific curator. And they shall also, whenever the same may be practicable, cause duplicates in reasonable numbers and quantities of the above-named specimens to be collected and preserved for the purpose of exchanges with other state universities and scientific institutions, of which latter, the Smithsonian Institute at Washington, shall have the preference. That is the one-sentence establishment of the Bell Museum in 1872 by our forebears. Mr. Chair, I know that you're having some discussion about the whole issue of arts and cultural heritage, and museums have tended to fit that slot. When you read this establishment, however, I would suggest that this is all about preserving our outdoor heritage and sharing it with others, and that is what we bring to you today. That is in fact a heritage to be preserved and shared, and a legacy we share with others. You have a black and white copy of this, but then handed out to you also was the in color, which is going to be much more fun for you to see as we have our presentation, and that is before you as well as we make our presentation. Denise Young, the director of the Bell Museum.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hausman. Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Director. Please state your name for the record. Yep. And go ahead.
I'm Denise Young, and I am honored to be the executive director of the state's official natural history museum, the Bell Museum. And with me today is Emma Allen, the museum's director of operations. I'm going to share a little bit about the museum, and Emma's going to speak specifically to our request. So the Bell Museum, which is one of Minnesota's oldest museums, became one of Minnesota's newest museums when we reopened in a new facility in July of last year. Let me start by thanking you and your colleagues for the 2014 funding to build that facility. That funding, coupled with significant private support, has made all the difference in our ability to engage and serve Minnesotans and to meet our mission of igniting curiosity and wonder, exploring our connections to nature and the universe, and creating a better future for our evolving world. What the museum does is crucial to helping people understand this place we call home, Minnesota, and to contributing to a more vibrant state through education, research, and outreach. The new facility, if you have been, you will know this. If not, I invite you to come check it out yourself. But the new facility is a celebration of Minnesota from the outside in. Our landscape is full of native plantings, and there are features on our property that reflect the vital importance of water to the state. Our building's materials are themselves of Minnesota and showcase our natural resources from the Iron Range in central Minnesota. And we even have bird-friendly glass that was fabricated in Owatonna.
People have been known to bump their heads there because they didn't know it was really there, as they lean in to see.
Yep. What makes a visit to the Bell Museum so special is that no matter where in the state that you're from, you will see something of your home here in our hall. The main exhibit gallery is organized by the three major biomes of Minnesota, where you can get an up-close and hands-on look at our natural history. And, of course, that is central to our heritage and legacy. And everyone leaves the museum with a better understanding of how people in our state continue to be shaped by as well as shape the land.
Now, I keep interrupting her. If you go back to that one, that's the only view of the woolly mammoth. If you look to the upper left, you see through the door a little portion of the woolly mammoth. And you really have to see it in person someday.
Please do come see it. I'm just going to take a very brief visual tour. You have the materials in front of you, since I know some of you have not been. But our Northwoods Gallery, of course, you can explore the prairies and savannas, big rivers and big woods. And you can even explore life in the universe at the Bell Museum. Now, the Bell Museum has always been at the intersection of the sciences, arts, and humanities. Our famous Francis Lee Jacques dioramas are an excellent example of that. And here we've got one of our specialists working on the painstaking work to move the artworks to the new Bell and restore these treasures for future generations. They capture the stunning landscapes and biodiversity of many specific areas of the state. And through the combined artistry of the muralist, the painter Francis Lee Jacques, who is a native Minnesotan, the foreground developer and the taxidermist, you feel like you're visiting these places. I actually call the dioramas at the Bell Museum the original virtual reality. And in an afternoon at the Bell Museum, you can stroll through the entire state to appreciate its beauty and diversity. Likewise, for many years, we've hosted artists in residence at the Bell Museum who explore the connections to nature and the universe through our scientific collections that collaborate with our curators and our staff. And each residency results in some sort of public performance, a gallery show, or other participatory experience. There we go. On Wednesday evening, on Wednesday evenings, you can stay up late at the Bell Museum, and we encourage visitors to participate in art experiences themselves. This is a photo from just last week where students from the Minnesota College of Art and Design came to the Bell Museum, and I wish I had their talent. They were sketching in the galleries in the evening. Now, in the 8 months since we have been reopened in our new facility, we've welcomed over 150,000 people, families, school children, and teachers from all across Minnesota. And just to provide some context, attendance at our former facility averaged about 38,000 visitors in the last few years. Oh, we're skipping ahead again. Now, the documents you have in your packet show our anticipated total attendance for this first year, which includes that we expect 200,000 visitors and over 90,000 visits to the state's new digital planetarium. And let me tell you how thrilled we are to have reopened a dedicated public planetarium for the state. It's been 16 years since there's been a planetarium dedicated public planetarium in Minnesota. The planetarium is an immersive environment for learning about Earth and beyond, and it is clear in the educational literature and through what our visitors tell us that when you are immersed in content and feel like you're there in it, you learn better and more deeply. We are leveraging the investment in the state's new planetarium to benefit local communities across Minnesota. We are providing technical assistance, and we also provide content to the seven planetariums in Minnesota, including in Moorhead, Rochester, Duluth, Marshall, and locations in Wisconsin and the Dakotas as well. And our portable planetarium, it's just a small, fits in a minivan and you blow it up with a fan motor. Our portable planetarium travels to communities across the state as well. As an example, our portable planetarium and educators are in Owatonna today, and next week they'll be at Alexandria High School STEAM Expo. Now, the Bell Museum is fast becoming a point of pride for Minnesotans, and our goal is to deepen our engagement with citizens statewide. We're the state's museum, and we feel it is imperative, therefore, that we are able to serve everyone. The new Bell Museum building has removed the physical access barriers that we once had in our former facility. And through generous private support, we're able to offer scholarships to ensure people with financial barriers are able to access the museum's resources. And this includes bringing school children from across the state, underwriting their field trip fees and sometimes transportation, and underwriting summer camp fees for over 80 children this summer as well as last summer. Nearly 10% of our 5,800 household memberships are what we call curiosity memberships, which provide a year of access to the museum for those of limited financial means. We're pretty serious about being accessible. And to continue to increase access to the museum's resources, we're requesting one-time support from the Legacy Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund to create materials and programs to further expand our ability to meet the needs of our increasingly diverse population of Minnesota, including people with disabilities and culturally and linguistically diverse communities. There are two components to our request, which is $300,000 in each year of the biennium. We've organized the request into two parts, equal access and cultural equity. And at this time, I would like to invite my colleague Emma Allen to share some early efforts that we've made to pilot these programs, followed by where we want to go in the next 2 years.
Thank you, Director Young. Go ahead. Please state your name and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Emma Allen, I'm Director of Operations at the Bell Museum. There are nearly 600,000 Minnesotans living with one or more disabilities in our state. And as we age as a population, this number will grow. So we can't stop at an ADA-compliant building. There's much more to a visit to the Bell Museum than getting in the front door. This funding allows the Bell to go beyond making a visit possible to making visits inclusive, engaging, and impactful for everyone. The Equal Access Initiatives allow the Bell to complete community-engaged design processes, where people with disabilities work with staff to identify barriers and design solutions. I'll offer the planetarium as a really good example. At the Bell, Minnesota has one of the few planetariums who offer regular ASL interpreted and captioned shows. But because I've worked with the audiences who are deaf or hard of hearing to develop this, I know that while our visitors really appreciate that we're trying, the experience isn't great. Yet. There are emerging technologies that could solve these problems, but we need the time and resources to work directly with the community to find out what works best. The planetarium is just one part of this project, and the deaf and hard of hearing community is just one community we want to engage. The Equal Access Initiatives will also improve access to the museum for people who are blind, have low vision, people on the autism spectrum, people with other physical and neurological conditions. This funding proposal is exciting because it takes the whole experience of the museum, and it takes on a variety of barriers that exist for different visitors through audio-described tours, tactile guides and modules, and information to let people know that we have these resources. The other part of our request is the cultural equity programs. And this will include translating the museum experience into the languages most spoken in Minnesota, the development of a suite of culturally relevant experiences about Minnesota's natural legacy, and capacity building for staff and volunteers through cultural competency and other trainings, awareness building activities to let people know that these resources and are available at our museum. I'd like to relay one example of culturally relevant experience developed by the Bell and the American Indian community over the last 2 years. Neil McKay, senior Dakota language teaching specialist at the University of Minnesota, had hoped to be here today to share this himself. I'm going to do my best to relay his comments. The Bell Museum is located on Dakota land, and we desired to acknowledge that in a meaningful way as we were designing the new building. In the course of many conversations between staff and the Indigenous community, we decided that the preservation of Indigenous language in the context of natural history and Minnesota's natural resources would be that meaningful focus. As Neil says, the Dakota language in particular is on life support. Together, we knew we could try and address this. The result? Today, when you are walking through the Minnesota Journeys Gallery, you will hear the voices of children from the Bedote Learning Center interpreting the dioramas in their native languages. This served as a meaningful learning experience for them, reinforcing their culture through language and the understanding of the land. And it serves as an important teaching tool for our museum visitors, that there have been people living in what is now Minnesota for many, many years who hold a deep understanding and knowledge about this land, and they are still here today. This is an important example of the type of community engagement that the museum believes in and will support through the arts and cultural heritage funding, one that deeply honors and respects cultures, is born from mutual interest and need, and is developed jointly. This type of engagement takes time, but it's incredibly powerful. And it is lasting. And getting to know the individuals with whom we have worked on this project, we have embarked on other activities together. And we are honored that Neil McKay agreed to join the Bell Museum's advisory board. Access inclusion isn't something we just talk about at the Bell Museum. It's something that we do. It's in every job description, and it's part of our strategic plan. As the state's Natural History Museum, we need to be relevant and accessible to all Minnesotans. This means we need to do the work to find out what we can be doing better. With your support, we know that this two-year project will go a long way towards these goals.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Allen. Ms. Young?
Yep, so just in summary, we've structured our request as a capacity building request to help the museum serve diverse communities and do it in a sustainable way. These funds would support and not supplant existing museum funds and would accelerate our ability to serve the diverse population of our state and creating more opportunities for people to interact with the state's heritage, arts, and history, as well as increasing public awareness about the natural world. We think this is the right time for this request. We've just made an incredible investment in an important state asset, and there's a lot of energy and excitement around the Bell Museum and natural history. But most importantly, we think that it is a vitally important request. We need every single person in Minnesota attuned to our environment and just how unique and special Minnesota's environment is, because today and tomorrow depend on it. So, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that concludes our presentation, and we're happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Young and Director Young. My apologies. Chair Hausman and yourself have invited me many, many times, and I just have not been able to get over, and I've driven by. I hope everybody's had an opportunity to either get there or at least drive by at night. It's amazing to see the massive woolly mammoth through the window, and I know your building is pretty neat. You're using some Minnesota products used on the outside, and I actually studied your parking lot because I want to do some landscaping in my own yard, and I was like, I drove in your parking lot and looked at your plantings and that sort of thing. So you've been an inspiration in ways that you don't even know.
Well, thank you.
And Chair Hausman's been a tireless advocate on this. So any final comments, Chair Hausman?
Thank you for hearing us today.
Any questions from members? I don't see any. With that, Chair Hausman renews her motion that House File 958 be laid over for possible inclusion. Again, thank you very much, Chair Hausman and people from the Bell. And
yeah,
that's
thank
it.
You.
we'll try to get over on a tour if we can.
We'd love to have you anytime.
I know you've invited, so thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang, I think I'll, Representative Zhang, would you like to move that House File 1823 be laid over for possible inclusion?
I'd like to move the House File 1823 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. So we have your bill before us, Representative Zhang. Thank you very much for coming to your to present. You're on this. This is your own committee. And but we're very much excited to hear your story today, and thank you for bringing the guests and filling our crowd with the leaders of and our neighbors from your community, and we're pretty excited to hear what you have for us today. Thank you, Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, House File 1823, is a bill to fund the Hmong Museum. The Hmong Museum is the first museum dedicated to preserving Hmong culture, art, and artifacts in the nation, and it started here in Minnesota. Minnesota is home to over 80,000 Hmong people who came to the U.S. over 40 years ago. Not many in our state know why the Hmong are here and their contribution as allies to the United States during the secret war, during the Vietnam War. It's important to know that it's important now to have a museum in our state because, because now the third and fourth generation children are eager to learn about their family history. When the Minnesota Historical Society finally created a temporary exhibit about the Hmong, they were overwhelmed by the biggest number of people to ever be in their building at once, numbering at 3,000 people attending the opening. That was only a temporary exhibit, but it demonstrated that people are eager to learn. Now that the state of Minnesota has this organization starting up here, we can provide funding to build their programming and capacity in order to serve all the people who are eager to have a Hmong museum of their own, where there could be permanent exhibits and where collections can be preserved so that future generations can access it. This bill will fund two exhibitions, the 2020 Hmong Clans and 2021 Cycles of Hmong Life, Call of the Rooster, workshops and classroom instruction, revival of Hmong needle work and crafting, oral histories, and video interviews of elders and veterans with film showings. By supporting this bill, we will invest in local artists, revitalize communities through the work of Hmong museum and artists, and provide arts access to highly underserved population. With me today is a friend who I've met a couple years ago, working on this project, and to see her here today testifying, who is the founder of the Hmong Museum. It's my honor to have Mai Vang be here to present.
Thank you, Representative Zhang, and Ms. Vang, go ahead and state your name for the record, and go ahead when you're ready. Before I get going, I've been getting letters all over the state and how important this is, so you've got a good effort going, and the utmost respect for that. But Ms. Vang, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity. It's really heartening to know that, and that really shows that there are people who are, can everyone hear me? There are people all over the state who have heard about us and support the work that we are doing. My name is Mai Vang. I am the founder and chair of Hmong Museum. And today I ask for your support in fully funding House File 1823 to appropriate funds to Hmong Museum and to create exhibitions and programming. We will develop, as Jay said, two new exhibits each year, answering questions about family clans and the diverse worldviews. Those are topics that we know that the community is interested in, and they want to share that with their families. We will complete dozens of oral histories from elders and veterans, something that we've already started, and we want to continue and expand. provide easy, develop curriculum so that teachers and students can have access to it easily and grow the partnerships that we have developed in the last few years with institutions and community members. There is an urgent need support us now for Hmong Museum, and there is high demand for it. And I will talk about it in a little bit. But I want to share why I have been working at starting this Hmong Museum for the last 9 years. When I was in college, I visited the archives at the University of Minnesota, and the archivist took me down into the archives, which is incredible. And I had never been in an archives or didn't visit museums very much. But when I saw the handwriting of this author who wrote this children's manuscript, I was transported back into history. And I thought about my parents' own history, and I didn't know very much about it. I was an adult, and yet all the things that my parents experienced was just myth. So in that moment, I realized that it is through museums that we can bring history to life and make it so that it can be preserved for future generations, my future children, and hundreds of years later, someone's going to pick up a book that someone here wrote or bandao that they made, and they will think back and think of the people who were alive today. What started for me as a dream is now reality. In 2015, Hmong Museum became a formal organization, and within 2 years, we received $82,000 in grants and another $20,000 in private donations, which funded multiple programs that we did over the last few years. Our growth has been rapid because the demand for the things that we are creating and doing in the community is extremely strong. The Hmong Museum's mission is to recognize and acknowledge the intersections of all things Hmong. We do that by documenting Hmong history and knowledge, collecting objects and archiving digital materials from the community. And for us as an oral culture, we also videotape these things because in order to capture the oral stories from the elders, we need to do it differently than most, for example, Western museums have done in the past. We create exhibits and we share Hmong experiences and stories in ways that are relevant to Hmong Americans today. We design our programs to be engaging and accessible, hands-on, with hands-on experiences and community participation. What we've learned is that the community is eager to create these programs with us. So we go in and work with elders, work with artists, and they develop these programs with us, which is why it is so effective. One of the biggest concerns that Hmong parents have is losing the language. It is the Hmong elders who hold these knowledge in their minds, and they are diminishing every year. It has been really rapid in the last few years. Combining these needs, we developed a program called Hmong Chronicles, and this was in partnership with Hmong American artists and elders. And here is an example of one that was created with Mei Li Ying, who is an award-winning playwright in the Hmong community. She partnered with two elders from the Elder Center, and some of those individuals are here. And they created this play. The elders called themselves Polai Lao, which translates to old gangster ladies. They're bad girls, badass women. However, you want to translate it, for Hmong women from different ages combine forces to speak their minds.
That's awesome.
They tell their truths, we retell unconventional folktales, and they make original comedy. This was an incredible program because never before has anyone seen a Hmong elder act on stage. Oftentimes they are relegated to as being needy or immobile. And here they are creating this comedy. It was hilarious, and they were incredible actresses. And we got a view into their lives through their own voices. And this is the kind of work and programs that Hmong Museum does. This show sold out. It was free, but I mean, we ran out of seats 2 days in a row, and I wish we could have brought it back, but unfortunately, we had we're limited in resources, and so we did it for 2 days, and I do want to bring it back because their story is incredible. Daily, we get requests from educators, students, elementary to college age, public libraries, other museums, museum professional organizations, art organizations, and conferences. They come to me to ask to speak about Hmong Museum and the work that we're doing. And they're asking for exhibitions, educational materials, and partnerships on programs from all over, Owatonna to Mankato. We get requests from Wisconsin, Michigan, California. And of course, we can't attend to all of them given our limited resources. We're pretty small. We started in 2015. But I'm here to make a case for Hmong Museum because we are truly in a unique position to bridge the gaps in our community between cultural institutions like museums and underserved communities like the Hmong community. My entire life's work has been in the development of museums. And I've worked in museums for over 10 years with multiple local historical societies. I develop policies for them and implement care of collection. I've sat on committees, oftentimes to find ways to improve community relationships between museums and underserved communities. And I am currently the registrar at the Minnesota Museum of American Art. The Hmong Museum is in a unique position to understand the cultural institutions and also understanding what these diverse communities need. And we will be able to help them bridge that gap and provide the access that many of our elders who do not have that access will be able to have, elders and other community members. Sorry, I forgot to change that. But here are some numbers from the last few years. Thousands of people have seen our exhibits. We've exhibited at the Minnesota State Fair, Northern Sparks, Old Owatonna Culture Fest, Festival of Nations. We've worked with an average of about 15 artists every year, and we reach over 200 families every year and serve 150 students through our Bandao program. Here are some comments that we've received from people who have participated in our programs, and I also want to share that I just learned that we got a letter of support from the mayor, Mayor Carter, and he said that he has sent it to Chair Lilly, so you can share it with the committee. Thank you very much for having us here. I want to show one video, and then I'm going to invite Courtney to speak about our partnership.
Thank you, Ms. Vang.
Kuchen yo zo lu che mong yo so trung Lu che so xiong wong long yo mua rung Po yo lo lo ro chen den du ju Nie se wo chai tu chi tau ka nu Sa zo ma jia yu rong xie wo lo Zo yo tong da yu nyo zo nian zhu Bei wo xin blen dian de zi lu sun dian Sa zo ma wo zhou gu gu muan de gian
Hi, welcome. We're getting a little tight, so I. But go ahead.
Okay.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Courtney Gerber. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I will speak quickly. I've worked in museums for over 18 years, and for the last 2.5 years, I've been at the Minnesota Museum of American Art, or the M for short, and I'm curator of learning and engagement there, and it's from this position that I've really been able to intersect deeply with my colleagues at the Hmong Museum through multiple cross-institutional partnerships. And today I wanted to share a story of one of those partnerships, the St. Paul Murals Project. And I'm hoping this will illuminate why I believe Minnesota needs Hmong Museum. The St. Paul Murals Project, the seed of which really originated with Hmong Museum, brought Hmong Australian artist Fanghua Anthony Vu to St. Paul twice in 2017, for first time for relationship building and cultural exchange with Hmong Minnesotans across generations, and then for the second visit for the creation of three public murals. And these murals really fused Hmong visual culture and traditions and heritage with contemporary perspectives and forms of creative expression unique to Vu and five local collaborating artists. Through slow and intentional trust building between our two museums, we built a foundation for a reciprocal partnership that in turn enabled us to foster intercultural understanding through art, effectively reaching over 300 people through direct engagements and then thousands by way of the public artworks that are still on view today in St. Paul. Key to the success of this project, besides a lot of laughter, honesty, and forged friendships, really was the bridge work done by Hmong Museum to bring cultural specificity and a nuanced perspective of engagement within Hmong community to the M, to my museum. Hmong Museum's partnership demonstrates operational savvy by its board and staff, building a sustainable future and a long-term commitment to our state's thriving and diverse Hmong and non-Hmong communities. What better place for this work than the Twin Cities Metro, which is home to the largest urban Hmong population in the United States. This is our community, and I believe Hmong Museum is an absolutely vital part of it. So thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for coming and visiting our committee and telling your story. Representative Zhang?
Mr. Chair, I believe my testifier has some people she wants to acknowledge.
Ms. Feng.
Thank you. I want to acknowledge that I am joined here today by some very special people. They're from the Hmong Elder Center and also the Special Guerrilla Unit, veterans who we've partnered with in the last year, creating digital stories with them, and some colleagues and friends who are here visiting us. And I want to acknowledge them because it is because of their support that we are here, and it really shows that there is a need in our community for this organization. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome everybody, and we're really honored to have you come visit this your state capital today, so thank you. Representative Zhang, I noticed that you have Ms. Herr behind you as well, and I don't know if she planned to say anything, but I'm on higher ed, so I just wanted to mention some of you might have an opportunity to say her name in the next few days. She's running for Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota, and is a very, my little bias, but she's a very, very solid candidate.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zhang, any final comments?
Mr. Chair, if you are okay with that, I just want to also address the community members who are here in Hmong.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank members of the committee and yourself, and especially for having conversations with me last week about the importance of this museum. And as you've heard from my testifiers and the presentation, it would mean so much to me and my community to have funding to move this program forward so we continue to educate, preserve, and ensure that for future generations, our community is still being preserved and being staged here in the state of Minnesota. You know, Minnesota is home to one of the largest concentration of Hmong Americans in the United States, and it would be great to have a Hmong museum here. Will be the first, I think, in the country. So thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zhang, and we very much appreciate having you and Ms. Vang and the others today, and certainly the elders. And again, it's with honor for us to hear your story, and we hope that we can very much do what we can to help you in this path to success. Representative Murphy had a good suggestion that we probably should have had that the old gangster lady. I can't say it in Hmong, but we should have had that taped by the our friends at the public TV, TPT, or whatever, that testified earlier. And that would have been a great little piece for us all to watch. So maybe next time, keep them in mind, because I'm sure they would help you out.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, with funding, I think we can make that happen.
Okay. I've heard you. Thank you, Representative Zhang. With that, Representative Zhang renews his motion that House File 1823 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you,
Representative Zhang, and thank you all for coming, and very much appreciate your visiting your capital. Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, would you like to move that House File 1882 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, I will.
1482.
Mr. Chairman, I will move that 1482 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much. With that, we have Representative Erdahl's motion before us, and we have your bill before us. And please go ahead and welcome. And
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what we are presenting today is the Native American Tourism of Minnesota group, and we are attempting to form a new something in which we're going to try to access some funds for tourism and build up tourism in Native American areas. And I guess rather than just stumbling along, I'll let the people that know the most about it talk.
Chairman Lilly and honorable members of the committee, my name is Melanie Benjamin, and I am the chief executive of the non-removable Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. And I am here today to talk about NATOM, Native American Tourism of Minnesota. It is my honor to talk to you about Minnesota's future of cultural and heritage tourism. My colleagues and I are inspired by the Legacy Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund's stated goals of cultivating Minnesota-grown businesses that thrive in the state, that invest in the creativity of its entire people. NATOM appreciates Legacy's ambition to give every Minnesota a voice and the ability to see the expression of his or her personal heritage in Minnesota arts, history, and cultural heritage works. Given this, our mission with NATOM is to honor and dignify the history, traditions, and values of the 11 Indian nations here in Minnesota by nourishing and encouraging the growth of a robust and sustainable Native tourism industry. We achieved this mission in part by inviting the world to come to Minnesota and its tribal lands and participate in one-of-a-kind journeys of Native American heritage, cultural, and understanding, starting with the very basics. The name of our state, Minnesota, derives from the Dakota phrase Minnesota Makoche, which roughly translates to land where the waters reflect the clouds. A Dakota observation that the river's opaque water was perhaps due to the limestone. Explore Minnesota inspires consumers and facilitates their travel to and within Minnesota. Its slogan is to find your true north. But at the present, Minnesota has none of that for the Native American tourism. Specifically, there is no means of marketing Native American tourism, including destinations, lodging, sacred sites, ceremonies, events, and outdoor recreation. NATOM aims to change this by inviting the world into the sites and spaces of Native peoples. When NATOM, there will be an opportunity to have an authentic experience while endowing the tribes with the power of telling their own stories. With NATOM, we expand the boundaries of tourism and encourage hands-on participation in the rich Native traditions, which include canoeing, ricing, fishing, hunting, garment making, and the sugar bush maple syrup production, and much more. NATOM has been incorporated as 501c3 nonprofit corporation under both the laws of the state of Minnesota and the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. The Minnesota Indian Affairs Council has unanimously endorsed us. Moreover, all 11 nations are represented in NATOM's board of directors. Through consumer advertising, social media, international marketing, NATOM will reach millions of potential travelers and tourists each year. NATOM's work to promote Native tourism in Minnesota will contribute to the economy and encourage business growth and employment opportunities. There is substantial untapped business potential for a well-developed Native American heritage and cultural tourism industry. Native tourism is a compelling springboard for each of the Minnesota's 11 tribes and their citizens to diversify and enhance their economic self-sufficiency. Native tourism is also an excellent opportunity to build a better understanding of American Indian culture and heritage, and to bring Natives and non-Natives together. Native tourism is an effective means of combating ignorance and hurtful stereotypes about Native Americans. There seem to be little interest or knowledge about 19th century treaties, in particular ones that were upheld by the United States Supreme Court, protecting the right of Ojibwe to hunt and fish. It wasn't that long ago that some severely misguided folks set off a pipe bomb at boat landings with Indians as their intended target. But now it's time to turn the page and move things in a positive direction. With Native tourism, we are inspired by the opportunity for creating shared experiences and offering a healthy foundation of understanding and knowledge. Simply put, understanding and the knowledge that brings us together makes us stronger and allows us to grow. Tourism is a $12.5 billion industry in Minnesota and the key factor of the state's economy. The leisure and the hospitality industry, a major provider of tourism services, employs more than 245,000 workers, representing 11% of the Minnesota private sector employment. Leisure and hospitality also generate 17% of the state's sales tax revenues. Every dollar invested in state tourism marketing returns an estimated $8 in state and local taxes and $84 in consumer spending by travelers who visit Minnesota. But tribal properties are not included in this calculus. In fact, tribal properties are not promoted or mentioned in any Explore Minnesota advertising or media campaigns. Unfortunately, there is little to no coordination between Explore Minnesota and Minnesota Indian tribes. But NATOM changes that. The director of Explore Minnesota was appointed to Brand USA, an entity whose mission is to promote the United States, specifically the Midwest, overseas. Minnesota Indian tribes with our rich histories and cultures will now have a seat at the table with Explore Minnesota in fulfilling this vital mission. With NATOM, we can and will be stronger together. As the tourism arm for the 11 tribes in Minnesota, NATOM will assist and market all tribal tourism-related industries. NATOM will promote all the tourism opportunities available to allow people to experience each of these tribes' unique traditions, stories, and legacies. NATOM's mission and that of the Minnesota Tourism Council are complementary to each other, because ultimately having a strong Native tourism industry makes a better and stronger Minnesota. Miigwech.
Thank you very much, Chairwoman Benjamin, for coming today and visiting and participating in the day that we had on the House floor.
Oh, yes. That was wonderful.
Very powerful and meant a lot to all of us, so thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I have Sonia Upton as well to talk.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Hi, my name is Sonia Tanner Upton. I am an enrolled member of the White Earth Indian Reservation, and I would like to thank you, Chairman, and the members of the committee for allowing us to be here today. I'm probably known more in Minnesota Indians country as a former owner of TNT Travel and Native Tours. I've worked with several of Minnesota's Fortune 500 companies, as well as the tribes here in Minnesota, as well as maybe 135 tribes throughout the U.S. in the travel and tourism industry. I've been on several national boards, but the ones here in Minnesota, I was an appointee of the Governor's Commission on Tourism, Southern Minnesota Met Council, Board of Directors, the Minnesota American Indian Chamber of Commerce. I've worked with Explore Minnesota, Mr. Erdahl. Erdman. Sorry, Dean.
He answers to quite a few names.
Yeah, okay. So when we talk about, you know, learning about Indian history, I think maybe one of my personal stories is I went to school in Minnesota public schools. I graduated from Bemidji State University, and it wasn't until I was probably in my mid-30s, which fortunately was quite a few years ago, but I did not know that the name of Minnesota was an Indian word. I didn't know what it meant. And I am, like I said, I'm from White Earth. So what we would like to do with NATOM is to inspire really understanding, curiosity, and empathy with diverse groups from, say, Tokyo, Japan, to seventh grade students in Des Moines, Iowa. NATOM, I believe, is Minnesota's future of cultural and heritage tourism. Chairwoman Benjamin and myself and the founding members of NATOM do agree with the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Foundation's 25-year-old vision, which their stated goal says every Minnesotan has a voice and is able to see the expression of his or her personal heritage in Minnesota arts history and cultural heritage works. I believe that NATOM can be the bridge that can kind of connect that community. We are excited to reach a worldwide market of people who are eager to travel great distances to learn about Minnesota's Indian culture and history. We plan, hope on working side by side with the folks at Explore Minnesota, maybe the local CVBs, and I think there's enough intellectual capital so that we can all tap in and work together and maximize each other's resources. With that said, I am honored to be able to connect with the Legacy Committee and would like to invite you all on a Native tour. I know time is hard to come by for you folks, but we could probably set up a tour and head over to the St. Paul Indian Mounds, which, of course, is a sacred site, ancient burial mounds. It's really, I'm not sure, maybe a couple miles from here.
Representative Zhang's district.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so again, I mean, it is a sacred site to the Dakota people. There's a lot of history, I think, that many Minnesotans do not know, like I said, including myself, until a few years ago. But if there's time, there's also Carver's Cave. I believe there was going to be an interpretive center built out there. And we can talk about Chief Little Crow and the village of Kapoja, which is now, of course, St. Paul Airport. But and it also ties into the Dakota creation story. So thank you. I'm here with Denise Gardner, Executive Director, and Doug Twade, who is our legal counsel. If anyone has any questions or concerns, I guess.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the offer of the tours. I often am disappointed as a legislator that we don't have more time to see many amazing things. Representative Erdahl, any comments that you'd like to make, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just I think that this endeavor presents cultural and economic opportunities that the state of Minnesota, I think, could be wise to explore.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. And again, thank you, Chairwoman, for joining us. And again, thank you for the other day where we gave us a learning opportunity as all Minnesotans. I'm lucky enough to live on water, and I often don't look at the water. I look at the water to look at the sky. And I thought that was interesting what you had said there. So thank you. With that, any questions? Seeing none, with that, Chair Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 1882 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, Representative Erdahl and guests. With that, I think we're there, and thank you, everybody, for joining. I think we had some great presentations today. With that, we are adjourned.